Sean Tanner sat at the pub bar and took a gulp from another large whiskey. The barman watched him. His notion was, as long as someone was sitting or standing, and did not look drunk, then it was okay to let them drink themselves into oblivion. Tanner kept drinking but showed no sign he was about to fall off his bar stool. The barman left him to it and served someone else. The pub needed modernizing. Sean looked at the brown patterned wallpaper that was curling at the edges. It reminded him of the wallpaper his mother and father had when he was a boy. Sean did not often think about the past, but was glad of the memory. Losing Rebecca had wrenched his heart out. Sean had attended her funeral 2 days earlier and accompanied her mother back to the remote island where she lived. Now, he was not sure what to do. Sarah Serking had advised him to take a couple of months off to help with the grieving process. He was not quite convinced it was such a good idea. It would give him too much time to dwell on things, and too much time to drown his sorrows. Tanner was on the mainland and staying at a small hotel up the road from the pub. He could not face going back to London and decided he would just as well stay put, close to Rebecca's mum. The small town provided enough amenities to fulfill his needs, so he was content enough. The pub door swung open, a group of lads entered. They were young and in high spirit. Tanner knew at once there could be trouble. Young men with testosterone coursing around their bodies posed a threat. He did not want or need any aggravation. The group circled Tanner as he tried to leave the pub. They presumably took his hasty retreat as a sign of fear. They were mistaken. The ringleader started roughing up Tanner, and the others soon followed. Tanner was having none of it and grabbed the ringleader by the throat. As Tanner elevated the lad off the ground, the other boys backed away, and the lad in his grasp thrashed helplessly. Eventually, Tanner released the boy, who sank to his knees coughing and spluttering. The rest of the lads hurled empty threats at Tanner as he left the pub. At his hotel, Sean Tanner opened his briefcase. Inside was a wafer-thin computer, a 9mm handgun, tracking devices, a satellite phone and an assortment of explosives. Chapter 1, Lily. Lily Anderson Pritchard stood outside the small, independent clothes retailer whilst waiting for her friend Bonnie. Their plan was simple. Bonnie would discover high-priced items of clothing they could sell and throw them outside the shop to Lily. Lily would leg it as fast as she could and let Bonnie face the music. They had figured that without the evidence, they would not get into trouble. It turned out that the local community police officers had other ideas. Since the two girls were seen in CCTV footage carrying out their minor heist, they had to pay for the items or face the prospect of a caution. When the police left Lily's house, her mother looked at her in disbelief. "You are grounded for the next month, Missy," her mother hissed. "Whatever," said Lily, marching up to her room. "Are you going to allow her to speak to me like that?" Lily's father looked at his wife and reflected on what he ever saw in her. Her face was contorting to match the unpleasant woman she had become on the inside. "I'll go up and have a word with her. That'll be a waste of time. You've never disciplined her once since she was born." Marcus Anderson Pritchard walked up the stairs seemingly with the weight of the world on his shoulders. Life with his wife Audrey had taken its toll on him. He now stooped badly and seemed incapable or unwilling to stand tall. He knocked on his daughter's door and waited for her to allow him in. When she didn't open the door, he called to her, but there was no reply. Audrey leapt up the stairs in a rage and swung open Lily's door. Lily was not in her room or inside the house. Her bedroom window was open, and the drainpipe that led down to the ground was bent, giving away her method of escape. The night was nippy. Summer was coming to an end, but there was still another month or two left before people would need to batten down the hatches for the autumn storms. The weather had worsened in Britain. Summer was now spoilt by heat waves, and winters were becoming harsher. Lily stood outside the only remaining pub in town. She phoned Bonnie. "Hi, Lily. Bonnie, do you fancy coming into town? Mum grounded me for a month, but I've managed to escape. If you're grounded, I don't want to go against your mother. Chicken. She can't do anything to you. Even so, I can still get into trouble with my parents. Just come, I'm on my own. I don't want to go to the pub alone. Okay, but I'm not staying out all night like last time. My parents will ground me for a month. On a hill, surrounded by bracken, a figure lay on their stomach, a high-powered rifle rested on a small tripod. The person reached over to a stainless steel flask and slowly unscrewed the top. A small cloud of steam escaped and drifted upwards. Gloved hands cradled a cup of hot tea and the person sipped and waited. The town below was gradually coming back to life. People had finished work, schools and colleges had emptied. Some people had already had their dinner, and others were coming out buying theirs from the sea of takeaways and restaurants located along the high street. Once finished with the flask, the figure checked through the telescopic sight on the rifle. Below, a young woman stood outside the town pub. The image through the sight resolved and the figure holding the weapon exercised meticulous care to aim precisely. An index finger curling the trigger squeezed and a crack sounded in the stillness. Initially, it was as if nothing had happened, then suddenly, people like ants below started scattering in all directions. The figure packed up and calmly melted away into the night. Bonnie was heading for the pub when she was nearly knocked over by a police car whilst negotiating the road. Waves of emergency vehicles hurtled past her approaching the beginning of the high street. When Bonnie rounded the corner, she could see the road was being cordoned off. Most of the attention was centered on the pub. She took her phone out of her pocket and dialed Lily. There was no reply. Bonnie tried once more, her heart pounding. Again, there was no reply. The police stopped Bonnie from getting any closer to the pub and she was forced to go home and watch the emergency situation coverage on the local and later, national news. A knock and then a ring of the doorbell alerted Marcus Anderson Pritchard there was someone at the door. He thought it was Lily who had forgotten her key again. When he opened the door and came face to face with two police officers, he was temporarily stunned. They had only recently spoken to the police about Lily and Bonnie shoplifting.
"What's Lily done now?"
Marcus asked.
"I'm sorry, can we come in?"
the male officer said. "Yes, of course," said Marcus, leading them into the sitting room. The female officer asked Marcus to sit down and then explained what had happened on the high street. Audrey returned home from the local shop and entered the sitting room. Her face hardened when she saw the police officers.
"What has that girl of ours done now?"
The officers stood up and explained the situation to her. She sank down onto the sofa and went into a state of shock. The officers rang for medical assistance, and when a paramedic arrived on a motorcycle, he administered a sedative and made sure Audrey went straight to bed. Marcus sat at his dining table with a brandy. He suddenly burst into tears. Years of henpecking by Audrey had robbed him of his personality. Lily had kept him going. Now he had nothing. He walked through to his garage and found some strong nylon rope. He headed upstairs and tied the rope firmly around the banister post. A creaking sound echoed off the walls. Then there was silence. Chapter Analysis. Timothy Gordon Hershaw entered as the post-mortem started. 25 years of experience as a forensic pathologist had gained him the admiration and respect of both his peers and his juniors. Most of the colleagues in the room knew him personally or knew of him. He wafted into the room as if on ice. He slickly changed into a lab coat and donned goggles, a mask and gloves. Rulers, tape measures and vernier caliper gauges were all wielded to verify the presumption that the entry wound on the victim's forehead was exactly in the center. Not approximately, exactly in the center of her forehead. A clinical shot. Or perhaps just a fluke. It was hard to tell. Chapter Conquest. Sean looked at the young lady lying next to him. She was in a deep sleep, snoring gently. The sun coming in through a gap in the curtains told him it was morning. He vaguely remembered her saying that she had to get up early for work. He tried to remember the job she did, but it escaped him. Sean knew he should not let her sleep much longer. It was 6 by his watch. He examined her as she slept. She was not a patch on Rebecca, but she was pretty in her way.
Tanner tried to piece together events from the night before that led him to have come back to the hotel with a young woman in tow. It did not feel much like a conquest on his part. He was feeling guilty and disappointed with himself. Rebecca had been gone for just over 2 weeks, and there he was, sleeping with the first girl who showed him some interest. As the memories started to flood back, he decided the conquest was hers. The previous evening she was eyeing him up in the pub. He could see from his seat at the bar that her mates were egging her on. Eventually, she plucked up the courage to come over and talk to him. He could not recall their conversation, but he was enjoying her company. Of course, it went further than he would have wanted, and now he was kicking himself. She started to stir. "Hello, handsome," she said, smiling. "Did you sleep well?" Sean said without hesitation. "Like a log. You must have tired me out." Sean was at a loss as to what to say next, so he leant over and kissed her forehead. It did not feel fake, and his tears welled up. "Ah, you're a real softy on the inside. I took you for a macho man when I first saw you. But you had something about you. I couldn't take my eyes off you all night." Sean didn't want to get rid of her as fast as he could. She didn't deserve to be treated like that. She was a nice girl, and he wasn't willing to tarnish the time they'd spent together. She probably wasn't expecting it to go anywhere anyway. After all, it was just a one-night stand. "I'll call down for some food to be sent up. The chef here does a mean English breakfast." "That would be lovely. I don't have to be at work until 8. If I'm a bit late, they can do without me for half an hour. I am the boss after all." Sean tried to remember the job she did but struggled, so he changed the subject. "Have you been watching the news recently?" "Yes, it's shocking. I don't feel safe going out on my own at night. That's why I was with my friends. We all look out for each other now. Promise me you'll keep doing that, you know, staying with a crowd." "Don't worry, I will." Chapter? A close call. Tanner entered the small police station and was met by the desk sergeant. "Hello, Mr. Tanner," the sergeant said as he shook Sean's hand. Sean was led to a small interview room. "Would you like a tea or coffee?" the sergeant asked, gesturing towards the table and chairs. Sean took a seat. "A coffee, please." Tanner looked at the man's name badge. It said Desk Sergeant Mike Planer. Mike poured a coffee and placed it together with cream and sugar in front of Tanner. "Thank you." Tanner paused for a moment. He didn't know how to raise the subject without causing offense. "How is the sniper investigation coming along?" "Well, we are short-staffed. London can't spare anyone yet. They said they'll be sending a detective next week."
"Just one?"
"They said we've got to ask for help from neighboring counties. We contacted all the counties in the surrounding area, but none of them could spare any officers."
"What support have you got?"
Tanner asked. Mike looked uncomfortable.
"Well, we haven't had access to a helicopter for over 10 years.
He poured himself a coffee and sat opposite Tanner. "Our mechanics had a go at making a flying machine a couple of years ago. It looked like a flying bed. They bolted large drones onto an aluminium frame. They only flew it a couple of times, you know, testing it out, but our lads were too scared to go up on it."
Sean thought for a moment. "Have you still got the flying machine?"
"Oh, yes. It's in one of the garages, probably pushed right at the back. Could I take a look at it?" Mike rubbed his chin and thought.
"If you don't mind pulling everything out and putting it all back again."
"Obviously, I'll give you a hand."
"Oh, I've just remembered, the boys controlled it with a phone and a gamepad. I'll see if I can find those in the stores."
At the back of the police station, Sean and Mike stood in front of the flying machine. Car parts and boxes surrounded them. Mike had found the phone and gamepad and quick charged them in one of the police cars. Tanner paired the gamepad and phone via a wireless connection and then dumped a sack of car parts onto the flying machine. Earlier, Mike had managed to get some charge into the machine's old battery packs.
"Here goes nothing," Sean said.
To his amazement, the machine slowly rose into the air and hovered. Tanner tried out all the movements the machine was capable of and slowly brought it back down to the ground. Mike had been watching from a safe distance, shaking his head in disbelief. The two men put everything back into the garages, including the flying machine, which now stood in front of car parts. Tanner returned later that day to fit lights onto the machine's framework. The following evening, Sean Tanner turned up at the police station kitted out for aerial reconnaissance. He was wearing a jumpsuit he'd bought from an army surplus store in town, and he had a brand new motorcycle helmet purchased from the local motorcycle dealership. His 9mm gun was tucked into a map pocket in the jumpsuit, and he was keen to get going. Mike had fitted new battery packs to the flying machine and charged them. He told Sean that the machine only had a flying time of about an hour, so they decided to lift it onto a trailer and tow it to Sean's planned search area. It was dark when Mike and Tanner arrived at the proposed search area. They quickly unloaded the flying machine from the trailer, then Tanner sat on top. He loaded the control app on the phone, paired with the gamepad, and popped the phone into his pocket. Using the gamepad, he slowly took the machine up into the sky. The lights he had installed were working well, and he began sweeping in a logical search pattern. 10 minutes into his search, Tanner heard a familiar rifle crack. Then, suddenly, one of his drones stopped working.